Yeah, just okay. I passed. Yeah, just take one. Bring the extras back, because I'll need the extras. So, from where? Yeah, just pass the extras back here. I need the extras.
Can we look to maybe one or two down here?
You can hold on to one or two down there just for extra people coming. Sure. I just need the. Okay. Perek Ted Zion starting with
Pasuk. You didn't have. I thought you had one. Sorry, I'm sorry.
No, I have one.
Sorry. Okay.
I just need these two.
I don't have
your other
plan. Sorry. I had it here and I thought it was mine. I picked up yours. Sorry.
Perek Ted Zion, Pasuk Dalet. Vahi Achrechen. Vahi Achrechen. Vahi Ahav Isha Benacha Sorek Ushma Delila. Here she comes, right? Vahi Achrechen. Vahi Ahav Isha Benacha Sorek Ushma Delila. After these things, that's actually, I think, the first time we've seen that phrase, which would seem to connect this story to what came before it. Somehow there's a after the story of...
It's connecting.
What?
It's connecting them.
It's connecting them, right? Shimshon turns his attention and falls in love with a woman, Benachal Sorek. Where this Nachal Sorek is an interesting question, because it'll become relevant for us. If you turn the page over, this is a map taken from the Dat Mikra Chumash, or Navi. And it has, we've seen this map before. If you look towards the center of the map, you'll see Yerushalayim. This is sort of the whole region where the story of Shimshon is taking place. All the various names of the places mentioned in the story are here. You have Yerushalayim and Hebron, south of Yerushalayim, of course. Draw the box from Hebron all the way to Aza, which is a story we saw last week. But Shimshon starts in the twin cities of Eshtaol and Tzor'ah, which are at the base of the mountain below Yerushalayim, today the area near the area of Shalabim, Natrun. That's sort of the area of Shimshon's region, Eshtaol and Tzor'ah. You can see the mountain range marked in this map. Just below the mountain as the plains open up, and then to the left of that, where the plains are, you have what's listed on this map as Eretz Plishtim. So the proximity of Tzor'ah, which is where Shimshon is born, to Timnata, which is the first city mentioned in the story, is clear on the map. Not surprising that if Shimshon was curious about the Plishtim, he would end up in the area of Timna. We talked last week, we mentioned the question of how he ends up in Aza. Aza is way down south in the heartland of Eretz Plishtim, which raised the question about why he was going to Aza in the first place. Nachal Sorek is a valley, it's a nachal actually, that starts at the base of Yerushalayim. It actually starts in the mountains, and it winds its way through the area of Eshtaol and Tzor'ah, and then opens up into the plains north of west of Tzor'ah, between Tzor'ah and Timna, all the way out to the sea. You see the mark of Nachal Sorek? Now, when it says Ve'yahav Isha B'Nachal Sorek, go figure out,
could be anywhere.
Where? Right. Go figure out where. No. Nachal Sorek is a very long, winding nachal. It starts in Yerushalayim, goes through Eshtaol and Tzor'ah, goes near Timna, and ends up all the way in the on the coast. So where is Shimshon that he falls in love with this woman in the Nachal Sorek? Unclear. I leave that as an open question for now, without a resolution. It will become a relevant issue later for us as we begin to explore who Delila is. But for now, we will go through the story. I want to sort of see the whole picture, and then come, as we have done in the past, see the whole picture and then come back to its pieces. It was clearly known that Shimshon and Delilah were together, or were he loved her. So the governors of the Plishtim, Sarnei Plishtim, or the officers, were the heads of the various cities. Each city, the five primary cities of the Eretz Plishtim, and there were five Sarnei Plishtim. So there's a certain understanding that these Sarnei Plishtim are the sort of heads of each of the major cities. They went up to her. Why up? Because Nachasarek is number one north, and number two geographically, depending on whether you're going into the mountains or whether you're just going geographically north, but they go up. Vayomrula pati oto, they said to her, do us a favor, pati oto. What is pati oto? Tempt him, seduce him, tempt him, do us a favor. Actually, if I'm not mistaken, that was precisely the phrase that the Plishtim said to Eshet Shimshon back in Perek Yedalet and Timna, in the middle of the feast, when Shimshon had come to, had challenged them with a riddle. And there it said in Perek Yedalet, Pasuk Tetvav, Vayhi Miyom HaShvi'i Vayomru Eshet Shimshon, Pati et Ishech, Vayagedlanu et Achida. Find some way to tempt him or seduce him in order to discover the riddle. Well, here it's not to discover the riddle of the lion and the honey, it's discover the riddle of, or to uncover the riddle of his strength. Urei bameh kocho gadol. Find out what the secret of his strength is. Uvame nuchal lo. How can we overcome him, overpower him? The asarnuhu la'anoto. So that we may bind him to torture him, afflict him. I guess they didn't want to make their intentions too clear to her, so they couched it in all kinds of euphemisms and subtleties. Right?
That's pretty cool.
Doesn't
right.
sound so good.
Right. I think it's pretty clear. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, she doesn't really care about him.
I think it's as, yeah. Right. That's about as subtle as a sledgehammer, as they say, guys. V'anachnu niten lach ish elef umea kasef. We will each one of us give you 1,100 talents of silver times Sarnei Plishtim, which are at least five. That's fair amount of money. That is a retirement to Florida, indeed.
Goodbye, Florida.
That's about right. Which is also an interesting contrast. The whole story here is a contrast to the Timnite. You realize every part of this, every sentence here begs a comparison. Because back in Perek Yedalet, they also managed to convince her to seduce Shimshon or to tempt Shimshon's secret, but there, it wasn't by offering her 1,100 gold, silver pieces.
The other incentive.
That's right. It was the other incentive, which is you do this or we'll kill you. So they challenged.
That's
the
threat.
That's right. They threatened her. And here the story begins to unfold. Vatomad lila el Shimshon. Hagidana li bameh kochacha gadol. Tell me, Shimshon, what is the secret of your strength? Uvameh te'aser la'anotecha. How may you be bound so that you may be tortured?
Not too subtle.
Why
she?
Would she very subtle.
I guess she subtle. Got the message from the plishtim that subtlety isn't the way to go here.
Don't change the message.
She just thinks he's going to come out and give her the answer.
I guess that's what she thinks. Vayomer eleha Shimshon, im ya'asruni b'shiv'a yitarim lachim, said Shimshon, if you bind me with seven fresh yitarim, yitarim are, what are they translated? Cords? Bowstrings. Bowstrings are thin.
Yeah,
other things, they're strong, but they're very thin. So if you tie me, bind me with seven of these fresh, moist, lach, strings that won't break, asher lo charavu, they haven't yet been dried out, v'chaliti ve'iti k'echad adam, and I will become like any other man.
Is it you bind me or they bind me, the Hebrew?
I guess they. I guess it's sort of the existential, if one binds me, im yasuni, if one binds me with, kind of thing. Ve'alu l'sarnei plishtim shiv'a yitarim lachim asher lo charavu. Now where does she have seven fresh, moist bowstrings that haven't been dried out? That's like right out of the factory. So where is she going to get them? She gets them from the plishtim. Ve'alu l'sarnei plishtim. So the sarnei plishtim supplied her with whatever she requested. Vata'asreyu behem. She bound him in them. V'horev yeshev la'bacheder. The ambush is lying in wait in the house, in the room. So here's the sarnei plishtim hiding. Vatomer elav, plishtim alecha Shimshon. And she, I guess, woke him up and said, Shimshon, the plishtim are attacking you. Vayinatek et hayetarim kashe yinatek ptil hanaoret b'haricho esh. He broke the cords, these bowstrings, like you would put the wax, the wick, ptil hanaoret, into fire. Just rip them apart. Which is also not the first time we've seen that image before. If you turn the page over, I put a number of these textual parallels into a chart in the beginning of the page. Kashin atek petila na'oed baruch ho'esh, we saw back in Perek Tetvav, when he was bound by Bnei Yehuda, v'atiyena ha'avotim asher zvotav kipishtim asher ba'aru ba'esh. Same analogy.
I mean, but she basically ambushed him because she had the people waiting. Doesn't he figure that out?
That's the existential question in this parak that we're going to ask ourselves four times before we begin to try to answer. Vayinatek et yeterim kashe yinatek ptil hanoed baricho esh v'lo noda kocho. How do they translate v'lo noda kocho? His strength wasn't revealed, wasn't known. So known, meaning that they
not known.
Was not known. It's a strange phrase. But I guess they didn't know, he didn't know. It didn't work. Whatever it is, it didn't work. No, so you're Mrs. Shimshon, or in this case, Shimshon's partner, because I don't think they will talk about whether they're married in a moment. You're the partner here in the story, and what's your response?
Making fun of me.
Who's making fun of whom here? It's an interesting issue, right? Who's challenging whom? Vatomad lila el Shimshon, hine hitalta bi. You're mocking me. Vatadaber like zavim. You lied to me. Now I really want to know, how can you be bound? Vayomer eleha, he says to her, okay, let's try this again. Im asor ya'asuni ba'avotim chadashim, if they bind me with new, fresh rope, fresh cords, ashalon nasa behem lacha, rope that's never been used for anything else, straight out of the factory. And I will be like any man. What do you think happened? Surprise, surprise. Vatikach dlila avotim chadashim vata'asneu behem. She took these new cords and she tied them up. Vatomer elav, it's like a game they were playing. Vatomer elav, plishtim alecha Shimshon. Shimshon, the plishtim are attacking. Ve'orev yoshev b'cheder. And the ambush, the plishtim are lying in wait in the room. He ripped them apart like they were thread.
Now we'd understand that he also then kills the Plishtim, or because the Tanakh doesn't tell us that, or they.
It doesn't say anything. I suspect that since the Plishtim are lying in wait, waiting for him to be subdued,
and he breaks the strings, they hightail it out.
I think so. I there's no indication that there's an actual confrontation here.
Allow himself to go through this?
That's the question that Ruth just asked, and that's the question we're going to have to come back to. I'm not sure we'll answer it today, but we will answer it. We will answer it.
Some of them must have been waiting in the room.
They were waiting, and I suspect that when he
only
opened
the first time, some left. So some must have stayed?
No, I think they come back.
They came back?
There's a time frame here.
They're the suppliers. They bring.
This isn't one night. This is over the course of
and
several weeks or months or years. There's no time frame here.
Could you say all brawn, no brain?
No, I think he knew exactly what was going on. I don't think he knew exactly what was going on. We'll come back to it.
We don't know if this is, the way the story reads here, it's as if this is one after another, but it could have been a lot of time.
I'm sure that there's at least nights in between, right, if not weeks. I don't think there's too much time, but I do think that there's some space. These aren't all happening in one night.
They got to get the ropes. It takes a little time.
They got to get into the house, and there's all kinds of. Patomad lila oshimshon, ad hena hitaltabi. Now that's twice. How long are you going to mock me? Vatadaver like zavim and lie to me. Hagidna li b'mate aser. I really want to know. How can you be bound? Okay, third time lucky, right? Vayomer elea, im ta'argi et sheva machlefot roshi, im hamasachet. You need to tie the seven locks of my hair to the loom. Masachet is like part of a weaving mechanism, a loom, different, right? Tie them up. So, vatitka bayated. She takes the seven locks of his hair and anchors them to the loom. Vatomer elav, plishtim alecha Shimshon. Shimshon, the plishtim are attacking. Vayikatz mishnato, he wakes up, which indicates that this is happening in the middle of the night. Vayisat yetad ha'ereg v'yat ha'masachet. And as he stands up, with his hair, he grabs the loom and the peg and the whole geschäft. Just picks it up. Okay, so now that's number three. Vatomer elav. Now she goes for the jugular, as they say. Vatomer elav. Ech tamar ahavtich v'libcha en iti. How can you tell me you love me when you won't tell me the truth? By the way, that's also a borrowed line. Why? Go back to Perek Yudalet. When the Isha Timni tries to seduce him, or tries to tempt him to give her his secret to the riddle, Pasuk Tet Vav and Tet Zayin in Perek Yudalet, Vatev Ke'eshet Shimshon Alav, she cried to him, Vatomer, rak snetani velo ahavtani. You hate me, Shimshon. You don't love me. Hachida chaddita livne ami veli lo higaddita. You gave a riddle to my kinsman, but you didn't tell me. To which he responds, I didn't tell my father and mother. Why should I? How can I tell you? And so there, of course, and then there it says, Vahiba yomashvi vayagedla ki hetzikatu. She berated him, nudged him. And she told the secret. So there's an amazing parallel between these two stories. It's about a secret that he holds, that the plishtim use the wife or the girl to uncover from him, to get from him. And here too, even the phraseology, Ech tamar ahavtich v'lipcha en iti. How can you say you love me if you are not with me?
I certainly know his weaknesses.
And remember, that's what we said back in Perek Yudalet, that's essentially what the Plishtim discovered from the very outset. that they thought they could uncover the riddle. What they really discovered was Shimshon's Achilles heel. Three times you mocked me, three times you refused to tell me what is the secret of your strength. Now, Pasuk Tet Zayin is exactly a parallel to the Pasuk we just read in Perek Yudalet. Vayhi ki heitzika lo bitvareha, as she continued to latziklo, to
pester him,
nudge him, harass him, all terms appropriate for this. Kol hayamim, or every day. So there's some passage of time between each one of these events. He reached a point where he was ready to die.
Why couldn't he just leave?
Oh, good question. That comes back to the same question that Ruthie asked. Vayaged la et kol libo. Finally, he uncovers. He reveals all his secrets. He just lets his heart out. Opens his heart. Vayomer la, mora lo ala al roshi. No razor has ever come to my head. Ki nazir elokim ani mi beten imi. I have been a nazir from birth. Im gulachti, if I would to be shaved. V'sar mimenu kochi. Then my strength would leave me. V'chaliti v'hayiti kechol adam. Then I would be like any man. Somehow, Delila got the message. Because v'teira Delila ki hi gidla et kol libo. This time she figures out that Shimshon was being truthful to her.
She tried every other time.
Somehow this was different in advance. Because v'tishlach v'tiklal sarnei plishtim. She went and she sent a message and said to the sarnei plishtim, this time we got him. Leimor alu apam ki yigidli et kol libo. This time you come, because now we've got him. So she saw that this was the right answer. This time it wasn't just an orev, it was the same sarnei plishtim, and they brought the money with them. Vatiyashneu al birkeha. She coaxed him to sleep on her knees. She calls over a barber to barb his head, as they say, seven locks of hair. And she began to afflict him. And his strength was removed. Again, plishtim again are upon you. He woke up in the middle of the night. I will go out. Right? Big deal. I can handle this. He didn't realize that God had departed him. Plishtim grabbed him. They blinded him. We talked about that phrase back at the beginning with the Mefarshim pick up on the fact that he's constantly going after his eyes, vayar, 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 and now he is blinded. Vayoridu oto azata, and they take him down to Aza. Hence the Gemara's comment about filat kilkulo ba'aza lechein laka ba'aza. Aza is the capital of Eretz Plishtim. His beginning of his downfall was in Aza, as we saw last week. Hence the punishment Mida k'neged Mida takes place in Aza. Vayasru b'nechushtayim, they bind him in chains. Vayitochem b'veit ha'asurim, and they make him mill they put him like a donkey on a mill.
You go around in the
grinding mill. Vayachal se'ar rosho letzameach kasher gulach, and as he is there doing the slave labor of the grind mill, his hair begins to grow back, part of the introduction to the story that follows, which is not our subject for today. That's the story of Delilah. That's the real story of Delilah. I don't know what they did in Hollywood, but that's the real story. So we talked briefly about the comparisons to the previous, to the Isha HaTimnit. The parallels, I think, are very striking. Right? There's the woman who he falls in love with, or he desires. He marries her. He engages with her. The plishtim come. They use her to seduce him into revealing the secret. There's some secret that he's keeping. In the case of the Timnite, it's the secret of the riddle. In this case, it's the secret of his strength. Ultimately, the story concludes where Shimshon is bound in both cases. In the case of Isha Timnit, Shimshon is bound by Bnei Yehuda. In the case of Delilah, he's bound by the Sanhedrin Plishtim. In both cases, there's some sort of defeat which Shimshon has to recover from. In fact, there's a tefillah of Shimshon at the end of both stories. Tefillah at the end of the story of Bnei Yehuda, where he's thirsty. And, of course, the tefillah of Shimshon in Beit Dagon, where he's bound and held by the two columns.
Is it significant that his hair is growing back?
Excuse me?
Is it significant that his hair is growing back?
Yes, but that's significant for the next story. We'll talk about that's a whole different issue. But, of course, the profound, all the parallels really point to the profound difference, which is not just because he, by the Isha HaTimnit, was loyal to Shimshon, they had to threaten her, and Delilah, who clearly is not loyal to Shimshon, clearly loyal to the Plishtim, they simply didn't ask her. They bribed her. Right? And, of course, the story of the Isha HaTimnit ends in Shimshon's victory, and here it ends in Shimshon's defeat. So there's a remarkable parallel between these two stories that highlight the contrast and the difference. It sort of sets the bracket, the framework for Shimshon's whole life. This is the last story of Shimshon's life. It sets the framework that Shimshon's whole life really revolves around the episodes related to these women.
But this one is so drawn out. Why? I mean, this one, three times, I mean, they go through the same thing. I mean, it's a whole...
Right. So that three times, and then ultimately he reveals the secret, like that whole piece of it, we'll come back to. Maybe today, if not today, we'll do it next week, but we will come back to. But I first want to start with the observation that really Shimshon's whole framework of his story, from birth, revolves around his relationship with these various women, and it's one of the reasons why the Mefarshim and the Rambam, we saw this Rambam once before, have such a difficulty understanding what was going on with these women, what was the status of these women, his whole life. It's like a really remarkable story. Shimshon is so extraordinary in this regard from every other biblical account, where really every component of the story revolves around the comparison of Isha HaTimnit number one, Isha HaTimnit number two, the story of Azza, and the story of Delilah. Four different stories, all related to his relationship with these women at various different stages. The only other individual whose life is so influenced by these foreign women who are coming into his lives, and both for positive and for negative, the only other individual whose life story has such an intense role around these relationships with foreign women is Shlomo HaMelech. And the comparison to Shlomo is very interesting because there's a textual parallel to Shlomo. How does the story of Delilah begin? The story of Delilah begins with a phrase which is actually quite frightening if you think about the significance of it. It starts with the phrase, Vayeh Rechen.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is the first of all of the stories of Shimshon's women. It's the first time the word Vayehav is used. If you go back to Timna, in the whole description of his relationship with the Timnite, never is the word ahava used.
His favor in his eyes or something?
Right. And actually the whole context there is is very different. If you look, and I actually charted this out for you also, if you look on the second chart on the page. Mm-hmm. So on the right-hand side where it says Shoftim Perek Yedalit, that's the introduction to how Shimshon enters into this marriage with the Timnite. On the left-hand side, you have the two additional women in Shimshon's life, the Zona in Aza and Delilah. And this is just the introductions. So, on the right-hand side, what do we read? Vayered Shimshon Timnata, went down to Timnah. We talked last week about why he's going down to Timnah. It's a neighboring city, it's a village, he's curious, he goes out. Vayar Isha B'Timnata Mibno Plishtim, there he saw a woman. Immediately, Vaya'al V'aged Laviv Limo. Certainly he's much younger. But he went down to Timnah, turns around and comes back up the mountain to Sar'ah, goes to his father and mother, and he says, Isha Ve'iti B'Timnata Mibno Plishtim Hata Ku Ota Li Isha. Of course, the father and mother react to the statement, I want to marry this girl. Right? There's no Jewish girls that you go running after the plishtim. Now listen, he doesn't say what we would typically expect in modern times, a boy who comes home with a non-Jewish girl to say. Right? I love her. She's so special.
The only one for me.
That's right. Vayomer Shimshon el Aviv, no, ota kach li, ki hi yashra b'enai. No, I want her. Why? Ki hi yashra b'enai. She finds favor in my eyes. She's good. She's yashra. Now, it's an interesting. Now, we'll come back to the gayrus issue in a moment, but it's just an interesting observation that there's a word that's missing.
Ahava.
Right. V'avivimo, and then of course the famous statement, which is so critical for our understanding of the story. V'avivimo lo yadu ki mi'ashem mikito anau mivakesh miplishtim. What his father and mother didn't understand was that this was by God's decree. God wanted Shimshon to find a plishtid because that's how Shimshon will begin to cause trouble for the plishtim. This is God's way of finding a pretext against the plishtim. That's the introduction to the Timnite. By the time we get to, that's in Perek Yedalet, the beginning of Perek Yedalet. By the time we get to Perek Tet Zayin at the beginning, Vayelech Shimshon Azata Vayar Sham Isha Zona. He's going down to Aza to find a prostitute. And then, Vayiach Nechen Vayehav Isha Benachal Sorek. So it's hard to understand Shimshon and love. It's an interesting two words that haven't been put together so far. Shimshon and Ahava, Shimshon doesn't strike me as a person who really understands the emotional depth of the word Vayehav. But that's dafka, the word that's used when he engages with this, with Delilah. Vayehav isha b'nachosvek ushma Delilah. So if you look at when we started the story of the Timnite, we asked the question about Geirus. Remember we had a whole conversation about conversion? What's the status of conversion? We looked at a Rambam who says, oh, it must be clear that he must have converted these women because how could you be possibly entertain the idea that he married these Gentile women as Gentiles? Remember that Rambam? Mm-hmm. And he says ultimately that he must have converted them. So we qualified our understanding of the Rambam's position. We'll remind us in a moment what we qualified it as. But if you go back to that Rambam, and I put the source back on the page because I wanted you to see it. If you go back to that Rambam, there was a piece there that we glossed over, but now it's so much more meaningful. When the Rambam discusses this, Al yale b'da'atcha sheshimshon hamoshiyah et Yisrael, oh, Shlomo Melech Yisrael, Shenikra Yedid Hashem, Nasun Nashim Nochriot B'Giyutan. Do not consider for a moment the possibility that Shimshon, the great Savior of Israel, or Shlomo Melech, King of Israel, the Beloved of God, could possibly have married women, Gentile women, as Gentiles. But rather, and then he goes to a lengthy explanation of how he must have converted them. Ulefi shegiyer Shlomo nashim binasan. Since Shlomo converted them and then married them, v'chein Shimshon giyer v'nasa. Similarly, Shimshon must have converted and then married, which we, in our discussion, talked about how conversion of women operated in the time of Tanakh. Essentially, marriage and the conversion all happened at the same time. It was sort of one process because the women usually came into the culture and lifestyle of the husbands in a patriarchal society, socially. Therefore, it was understood that if she's marrying a Jewish man and going to live in the society of Jews, she's of course going to live by Jewish traditions. She's going to go to the mikveh, which is essentially every bathhouse, and she's going to live, keep kosher house and keep Shabbos, because that's just part of the lifestyle. So you don't have the test of sincerity that you would have in today's time, which is to adopt a religious lifestyle, because today we live in a secular world. So to adopt a religious lifestyle today is an act of demonstrative commitment. Whereas in the time of Tanakh, that was just the societal context in which one lived. The only time you have a real test of sincerity in the process of conversion in this regard, if you're talking about conversion for marriage, would be in the case of male converts, because you had the test of sincerity in the act of circumcision. Which is why, outside of the story of Shechem, there are no instances of male converts in Tanakh. They just aren't. For that reason. So what does the Rambam do here? The Rambam puts together two stories. Namely, Shimshon and Shlomo. Shimshon and Shlomo. So the Rambam sees the story of Shimshon and the story of Shlomo as inexorably connected. And that's what we just mentioned, the fact that there's this role that these Nashim Nachriot play in their lives. The only two persona that have this kind of intensity are Shlomo Melech and Shimshon. And the phrase Vayehav, which is the introduction to Shimshon, is also the introduction to Shlomo. Because the story of Shlomo's downfall, which is the wives that he marries, in Shlomo's case, they were married for political reasons and political alliances, and you didn't have three. You had 300 plus 700 concubines. But
do you think that Shlomo looks as ridiculous as Shimshon does in this overall picture?
No, Shlomo is much more sophisticated than Shimshon.
Yeah.
But the parallel is specifically on this issue, because the story of Shlomo's wives begins with the phrase "Ve'amelech Shlomo ahav nashim nachriot." The word "ahava" is very rarely used in Tanakh, in the narrative of stories. Very rare. The two most prominent instances are Shlomo and Shimshon. By Yitzchak and Rivka, you have it a few places, but it's very rare, and it's usually it's indication of some. I mean, Yitzchak and Rivka is the other side of the coin. So you can argue with Neshe Shlomo, and that's why the parallel is so important. You can argue with regards to Neshe Shlomo that Shlomo, in fact, does convert them in the sense, that's what the Rambam is saying, that they're converted, but because they're converted for the sake of marriage and because they're converted in this kind of context that leaves a question as to motive and purpose, etc., the result is, when you deal with one or two or three or four or five, you're the king and you have multiple wives in a polygamous society, so be it. When you're dealing with 1,000... there will come a point in time, as does happen with Shlomo, when you no longer set the tone for the cultural center of your household. And now, as you get older and the women in your palace were usually a generation younger than the counterparts, the result is that their cultural backgrounds, which were subdued for all of these years, suddenly reemerge. And idolatry becomes rampant. That's the beginning of Shlomo's downfall. In Shimshon's case, I think you have a similar phenomenon happening, although it's not a function of numbers, it's a function of stages, meaning what the Rambam writes about the Timnite, that he converted her. I can hear in case number one. I can hear the conversion process. We talked about this before. I can see the conversion process with regards to the Timnite. Here, I don't see any context in the Zona in Aza. There's no context of Geras in the Zona in Aza. And this certainly doesn't seem that there's any context of Geras in Delilah. And she's not coming to live in his domain. He's going to live in
her domain.
Her domain. It's the exact opposite of the world of Shlomo. So from that perspective, we've seen a progression of Shlomo's story revolving around these women, but the progression has taken us from the Timnite story part A, the Timnite story part B, to the tragedy of Bnei Yehuda, ultimately flipping to Aza, and we're suggesting that we went to Aza really as an act of desperation in the aftermath of the failure of Bnei Yehuda, to this very strange context in which he engages with this Timnite, with this Isha ben Nachal Sorek, but there's no mention of marriage here. Correct? The Rambam's theory is based on the fact that he marries these women. If he marries them, clearly he had to convert them. He doesn't marry the Zona and the Aza, and he certainly doesn't marry Delilah. That's precisely why I think the emphasis here is on Vayehav, rather than the description of Otak Kachli that we have so elaborately in Perek Yudalid. There we're talking about marriage. We're not talking about marriage here. We're talking about a classic example of called Znut, significant other, however, whatever modern term you want to use, but in Tanakh, certainly contrary to however we see the relationship between men and women in an ideal sense.
Well, it seems like he's reached total despair. He leaves Bnei Yehuda, he knows they didn't get behind him, he knows his mission's failed, basically, because, you know, you can't rule if you can't, you know, you can't change rulership if you have nobody following you. So he's given up. He goes to the Zona in Aza. But that still feels like, you know, that was his weakness that he was born with. That God gave him this weakness. And then he goes to this other woman. And she's basically, from the time she meets him, she's threatening him. She's trying to find his secret to destroy him. And she basically tells him that 3 times. Who knows how many times not written in the text. And, you know, it was foregone conclusion, this guy's going down.
Right.
And so that's like tragedy, because it's like his weakness is something he was born with and he can't do anything about it.
Correct.
So he's
That last sentence I'm gonna disagree with you on. Everything you said up until the last sentence I would agree with you. I think that he has given up and he is acting out of desperation. He did go to Aza, and his relationship with Delilah, I think, is a component of that
despair.
It's fundamentally different from the story of the Timnite, where he's in control and he's driving the agenda. I don't believe, however, that you can say that he has no control. Because if you go back to the very beginning of our discussion was about where his control lies. And what we suggested was that Shimshon's life revolves as a kind of tug and war between two forces that are playing themselves out in his personality. To use the metaphor of Chazal's Midrashic interpretation, you have the Nazir and the Sota. Right. Chazal link the two parashiyot of Nazir and Sota and Parashat Baalotzcha. They link it to the story of the halacha about if you see a Sota b'kukula, you should become a Nazir. And there's all kinds of midrashic links. Where Chazal saw the connection between the concept of a Nazir and the concept of a Sota was essentially in the story and the persona of Shimshon. Because what you have is exactly at conflict with each other, two very powerful drives in Shimshon's own persona. You have on the one hand his Nizirut, which links him to God, links him to his mission, links him to the sense of self-control. Right? They're opposite forces. Nizirut is all about self-control. Sota is all about the lack of self-control. So on the one hand, you see Shimshon out of control and yet in control. He goes down to Timnah and falls in love with the Plishtite, but he's in control. He's got a riddle. He's going to taunt the Plishtim. That's exactly Shimshon's balance. He's out of control, but he maintains control. That's the balance. And he can maintain that balance with Perek Yudalet. He can maintain that balance with Perek Tetvav. It's the struggle between his Nizirut and his Sota persona, if you will, in himself. Until we get to the story of Bnei Yehuda, and the story of Bnei Yehuda challenges that equilibrium. So by the time we get to Perek Tet Zayin and we enter into the story of the Zona, you begin to see one of those two sides of Shimshon's personality emerging as stronger than the other. You begin to see him kind of abandoning that Nizirut control for the Sota persona. But you can't even get to Delila. Vayehavi Shab Nachal Sorek. Where's the Nizirut? That's exactly the problem. And I'll go one step further and suggest, and this is sort of our introduction to the next piece of it, which is that which is the question of who Delila is. Because there's very little about Delila that we know. There's no background to Delila. And I think who she is part of this question of what Shimshon's doing, what's driving Shimshon. But I don't think he has no control. I think he has let go of one half of his personality. And it's the half that has maintained his control and balance all of this time. It's his Nizirut. And that's what I think is happening in this story. I think he's letting go of his Nizirut. And ultimately, that's what he tells her. He tells her, the secret's in my hair, cut it and I'm done. And so you see him literally let go of that half of who he is, because that's what's been holding him back. That's what's connecting him to God. That's what's connecting him to his mission. Otherwise, he's just pure Sota. And up until this point, we've tolerated the Sota half of his personality precisely because it's Me Hashem Hu. But that's provided he keeps a handle on the other half of that self-control, that self-discipline, that sense of nizirut, of holding back. Let's go of that, and Shimshon's finished. And that's exactly what's going on. So I would qualify your last sentence about him being not having control. I think he has. I think it's a choice that
right,
he makes.
But I'm just saying he's so despondent.
Yeah, we can point to.
There is, and you don't have hope, and you don't have faith.
Correct. We can point to where that shift takes place, but ultimately, that's what his choice is to act on that despair and let go of his nizirut, and ultimately, he's held accountable for it. Which brings us to the question that I just mentioned, which is who is Delila? Now, who Delila is really. A remarkable story. Why? If you look at the Mefarshim, on this question of Geirus that we just raised, which the Rambam articulates, as we said before, with regards to Nachal Sarek, my argument is that you can talk about Geirus for the Timnite, you can't talk about Geirus with regards to the Zona Naza or Delila. It just doesn't make any sense in the story. However, that's my reading of it. Let's call it what I would say my bias towards a pshat. The Mefarshim discuss this. So, for example, the Rabag by the way, there's another fundamental difference between Delila and all of the other instances that we have of Shimshon's women. Timnite, Zonanaza Delila. Let's do it out of four. Timnite first time around, Timnite second time around, because the relationship is different. Zonanaza Delila. One of these things is not like the other.
Is she a Plishti?
We're going to come to who she is in a moment, but just in terms of what I just described, here are the four women in Shimshon's life. The Timnite the first time around, the Timnite the second time around, the Zonanaza Delila.
She's not in the city?
She is in Nachal Serek.
That's a region, fine.
Okay. But that's not the that's not the profound difference. A much bigger difference. Much bigger difference.
She has a name.
Correct. She's the only one of the four that has a name. She's the only one in the of the four that has a name. Vayehav Isha Benacha Sarek Ushma Dlila.
She must be special.
Very special.
Yeah, she is.
Either she's special, or
you want to know who really kills him.
Right. Or that's also possible.
The relationship
right?
is more than
or she's driving the ship.
Right.
And she's driving the ship. In Timna he was in the driver's
right.
seat. Even in Aza he was in the driver's seat. In the story of Delila,
she's
in control.
But that's interesting because, like, Isha Shinumi, she was driving, but she doesn't have a name.
Correct. Correct.
So
it's not consistent. It's not consistent. In this case, however, I think that there's a compelling component of the story that identifies the fact that he has actually intentionally taken that step back and allowed her to take that role. So her role is very significant. And there's other comparisons, too, as to why she's so powerful and so significant. We'll come to it in a moment.
It still bothers me that we go through this three times. I mean, it makes him look really kind of silly.
Stupid.
Well, I didn't want to use that word.
I agree. I'm not going to be able to address... Adina,
you makes him... You have a whole page of it.
You are correct. It makes it look like he's silly. I'm going to have to, unfortunately, hold that question for next week. But I will suggest to you that actually it's not Shimshon who is being silly in this story.
But
you're saying he gave up control. You're giving him credit.
I will give him credit. I will give him credit. I will hold him accountable. I will hold him accountable because that's what ultimately he fails,
right?
But I will give him some credit here, and I'll tell you why, but I will next week.
No. Are you giving him more credit than
he deserves? No. I'm just...
You're saying this is part of the plan to undo the Philistines?
No. No. I don't believe this is part of his plan at all. On the contrary, that's exactly my point. That I think God's plan and Shimshon's partnership in that plan is up to Perek Tetzvav. Perek Tetzayin is not part of God's plan, it's part of Shimshon's giving up.
He doesn't want the role anymore.
Whether he even consciously had it or not, I don't know. But he certainly has given that up.
But the text tells you that he was a Shofei for 20 years.
The first 20 years.
Yeah,
before. Up to that point.
You know that's the end.
Correct. This is where the Gemara says, Tchilat Kul Kulo. This is his downfall.
But you're concentrating on him. You're not talking about Delila.
We'll come to Delila. Let's talk about Delila. Well, we're going to start now. Let's talk about Delila. So first of all, you have in the Mefarshim whole questions. The same question the Rambam raises about the Isha Timnit, the Mefarshim raises about Delila. Is she converted? Is she not converted? The Rabag, Achar Ken Siper, She'ahav Isha Menachal Sorek, Mibnot Plishtim. Right? She's a Plishtite, says the Rabag. Ushma Delila, V'yidmeh Shegira Tchila. Kamo Shemu Chazal. Says the Rabag, must be that he first converted her because that's how Chazal understand the story. Again, I have a difficulty, and I've suggested this, I have a difficulty understanding Delila in the context of a convert role. It just, she's too interconnected with the world of the Plishtim.
Right.
The Malbim, on the other hand, and I think the Malbim agrees with me. The Malbim, well, I agree with the Malbim. Let me rephrase that for the record. What is it? First,
that you had that on tape.
That's right. First of all, why is this story connected to the previous story? Says the Malbim very profoundly. Avera goeret avera. If you think about it, his Perek Tzayin begins with the Zona in Aza. You start down that path, unless something happens either internally or externally to kind of pull you up from the bootstraps, you start down the path, it's going to carry you forward. Avera goeret avera. It's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. One thing leads to another. You start down the path of the Zona in Aza, before you know it, you find yourself a Delila in Nachas Avek. And therefore, the Malbim argues, Harishana Giyeh. I'm happy to say, talking about Geras, Timnit, that's not a problem. Vishina Shema L'Shem Yudit, Avazu Lonit Kaira. But this one, Delila, I'm not buying conversion, says the Malbim. Vinishar Shema Delila, that's why the Malbim understands why her name is mentioned, because it's a foreign name, and it remains a foreign name, and we therefore should know, Shema Delila, she is a Gentile, and she remains a Gentile. That's the Malbim's take on why the name is mentioned.
But the others were foreign.
The others, he claims, were converted.
We don't know their
names. The others were converted, so they become part of the Jewish, the world of Shimshon. It's only one in this case, the Timnah. And then he clarifies exactly why. That's exactly, and he quotes Yerushalmi, that in Timnah there was marriage, and here there was not. So essentially both, I think, are arguing that that this Delila is a, the Rabbag argues specifically, explicitly says that she's a plishtit. She's a plishtit.
Does this mean that there were foreign names? So if you had the name Mary or something like that, that there were certain names that were foreign?
They're just by language. Yeah. It's not a Hebrew name. Delila is not a Hebrew name.
Oh, there are a lot of different Hebrew names that aren't Hebrew names today.
Today, but in the time of Tanakh, if you were an Israelite, you had a name that was of Hebrew origin. If you weren't, you had a name that was of Canaanite origin or Plishtid origin. But I want to go back to the issue of who she is, because the assumption here is that she's a plishtit. However, the assumption, so the Rabbag says, Isha mibnot plishtim. But if you go back to the text, it's interesting. It never says that she's a plishtit.
It says the
Timnite is clearly a plishtit. Isha ve'iti betimnata mibnot plishtim. The Zona in Aza is a plishtit city of you know, the capital of Eretz Plishtim. Nachal Sarek, as we pointed out, is a long Nachal. And it's at the very northern tip of Eretz Plishtim, which is the border between Eretz Plishtim and the remnants of the Canaanites. So, by identifying her in Nachal Sarek, we don't necessarily know if she's plishtit, because it never says so. Or Canaanite, which would be a whole different kettle of fish for Shimsha. Or, for that matter, a Jewish girl.
I said
that's what the Malbim says.
Oh. That's why I asked.
That's what I said the Malbim says.
Okay.
Well, do we know from the entomology where the name is?
Hard.
Doesn't something?
Yeah, there's a drush on the word Dali, but from the name, I don't think you can make an argument. I'm not sure you can make an argument. The Malbim tries. Okay, I buy that. But nonetheless, Nachal Sarek is near Machane Dan. Right, it's near Tzara'ah. Number two, look at the phraseology. Vaya'alu elea sarnei plishtim. Sarnei Plishtim come to her.
She could have been at a different tier.
Right, they have to go up to her.
They got to go find.
Number three, in order to get her to agree to their terms, they have to offer her an incredible amount of money.
Instead of threatening her like they did with...
Well, they threatened because they didn't know who the Shimshon was. The only thing they had was this riddle, and it bothered them that there was a riddle. Now they know who Shimshon is. Who is Shimshon at this point in the story? He's public enemy number one. I don't think there's a plishti alive who doesn't see Shimshon as an enemy. Which is really remarkable. If she was a plishtit, and her loyalties was with plishtim, like why would she fall in love with him?
What makes you think she's in love with him?
Right. Yeah, we don't know that he loves her.
Okay. Well, she says she's in love with him. She says, you don't love me, therefore you won't tell me. Right? No. I don't think so. I don't think that that's the issue. I think she actually does have a relationship with him, and it's a profound relationship with him. They don't have to... If she didn't love him, if she was trying to trap him, she wouldn't need 5,000 talents of silver to bribe her to do this. This was a bribe. And she took the bribe. And she took it.
Whatever,
the relationship was superficial. Most of these relationships are often superficial, but nonetheless.
She sets him up so many times, and he knows each time that she's setting him up, and each time he wakes up.
But that's not how the relationship begins. The relationship begins, Vayavi Shabbanachal Sarek. I don't think she goes. She doesn't go. Well, we'll come back to that issue. I told you, we'll come back to that issue. But she does not go into this relationship. Does not go into this relationship with the intention of trapping Shimshon. The plishtim come to her. They offer her. They have to bribe her. And when she finally gets Shimshon, she calls the plishtim on the phone, or she sends them a text message, I've got him. They have to come back with the money. She's money driven. She's not driven by hatred, and she's not driven, and this is really more important. I don't see she as being driven by a national agenda or a national perspective as a plishtit, right? Follow the argument. In the Timnite, when they went to her, they said, and they used that argument, that you're a kinsman. How can you let this guy have you come to disinherit us? Have you come to let this guy take our possessions away? Right? You're one of us. They never said to her, how can you have a relationship with this guy, Shimshon? He's an enemy of the state. He's a public enemy number one. How can you dare? They come to and they offer her a bribe. These are the Senei Plishtim, the governors of Plishtim. Nothing in the story reflects her loyalties to the plishtim more than her loyalties to
money.
So I'm not convinced in this case that she is in fact plishtim. Even her declaration to Shimshon, what's her declaration? When she ties him up, 3 times, 4 times, she ties him up. What does she say to him?
If you love me, you'll tell me.
No, besides that, but that's to get into Patala. When he's tied up, lying in the middle of the night, sleeping, tied up, and she wakes him up with what statement? Plishtim alecha Shimshon. Shimshon, the plishtim are coming. Now, if she's a plishtit, she's not going to say plishtim alecha Shimshon. Sounds as if she's also on the outside. She's calling him to protect her. The plishtim are coming. Plishtim alecha Shimshon. They're an outsider.
Now,
right.
And what are you going to do about it? Right.
Right. Okay. So you're really not letting go of this issue. We'll have to come back to this issue. We're going to start with this issue, Bezrat Hashem, the beginning of class next week. But where I wanted to get to was this: the question, the mystery of Delilah. The mystery of Delilah is on 2 levels. Number one, I would challenge the convention that she's a plishtit. And if she's not a plishtit, then the question becomes, is she a Israelite? Now, if she's an Israelite, think about it for a moment. No, I said I believe in the Malbim that he didn't convert her.
Right, but you don't believe in the name.
If she's not a plishtit, if she's Israelite,
be converted, right?
If she's Israelite, so I don't need to convert her. That's true. But if she's Israelite, yeah, then you have to ask the question, what is she trying to do? Mm-hmm. Why is she trying to give him up? So either she's just so far gone that she'll just take whatever money is coming her way, but she's not the first Israelite to try to give Shimshon up.
All the Yehuda people.
B'nai Yehuda did too.
Maybe she's a daughter. Maybe she's by
Yehuda.
Maybe
she comes from Yehuda.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe there's some connection there to see Shimshon.
With the wrong name. Destroyed. It wasn't the
that they what?
You were worried that B'nai Yehuda were just saying they're going to destroy. So
if she's an Israelite, I can see her being motivated by some aspect of that. The other possibility, that's true, she has the wrong name. The other possibility is that she's not Israelite, but she's not Plishtit, which would make her Knanite.
Well, that would at least make a little more sense, because right. Some of it would go with your theory.
And if she's Knanite now, the whole story changes.
Right. So she has to be.
Knanite, the whole story changes, then...
That's what you want us to...
Well, then
that's where I sort of... That's what my bias is to.
Geopolitical issues, too.
Correct. So we will have to figure out next week.
Stay tuned.
Well, who she is, we're never going to figure out because it's a mystery. It's an open book. But ultimately, the question that we really need to address at this point is the question that we've raised so many times, and I refuse to answer it today. But we need to answer it, and that is why does who's the fool here? Shimshon or Delilah?
Well, so far the consensus seems to be Shimshon.
Right. We'll see. We'll see. Shimshon is many things. I don't take him as a fool. So
yeah, I don't
we'll
know.
See.